Portions of this program may be pre-recorded.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
All right, welcome back. I appreciate those of you that have returned to listen to me, Marshall Wood, as I fill in for Dr. Gene A. Youngblood here on Let's Face the Issues, a program sponsored by First Conservative Baptist Church, a church that I chose 3 years ago because the Word, as I understood it and was presenting it, was being preached very forcefully and very accurately from a pulpit by a man who I deeply respect, and that's Dr. Youngblood. We wish him a speedy recovery. We want him to come back so that you can hear the truth of the gospel spoken every day on this radio station, courtesy of people like Jeff Youngblood of Tools for a Time, and we thank him greatly for sponsoring this program, his dad's program, and allowing us to bring you things that we're talking about right now. We began the program asking, do you believe? What do you believe? What do you really believe? And as a result of what you really believe, what is it causing you to do, and challenge you to not go with the flow, to look and see that, in fact, the emperor is naked. Things are not right in our world today. We're accepting things from our government, and for those who are trying to take over the government, that would be, in my view, the evil Democrat Party of the United States of America and its global Marxist operatives and socialist operatives. We can't go with the flow. We have to understand that the time now is to stand to preach the gospel in season and out of season. As I told you, that as Doc believes, the rapture of the church is imminent. The tribulation is at least just a little more than 7 years away. That will be followed by the return of Christ and the messianic reign in which he's going to show us how it should have been for the whole time, ending in the judgment of Satan and the new heaven and the new earth, when things are going to be finally back the way they should be, when all things are reconciled to Father God. Now, we're talking about Earl Warren, and I had pointed out that he'd been the governor of California and a graduate of the University of California, Berkeley, where so many good things come from, including still today, tongue-in-cheek, if you don't understand that, and that he was head of the Masons in the state of California, and that he was of the belief that the best government is a government that's kind of run by a group of well-intentioned elite people that called shots, and that, according to his biographer. And then we had talked a little bit about the conflict or the contest between Earl Warren as governor and Earl Warren running for president in 1952 against Dwight David Eisenhower, and that Dwight Eisenhower, in return for his, Warren's endorsement of Eisenhower, had made Earl Warren the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, and that was ratified in 1974. He was temporary and then ratified by the Senate in 64. So, and correction, sorry, folks, in 1954. The election was in 52 for Eisenhower. At any rate, if I can get back on track here, it's important to note that the Earl Warren Court did a number of bad things, but the two that are particularly bad, and the first one I talked about happened on June the 25th, 1962, when the Supreme Court of the United States just sort of decided without any really prior case studies and just a unilateral decision that, well, this is the way things are supposed to be because there's a violation of church and state, in a very unconstitutional decision, in which God was kicked out of the public school system. June 25th, 1962, and the Wall Builders Foundation did some research and found out that the national statistics from the Bureau of Vital Statistics, that publishes all the important trends in our nation to judge the social health of our country, discovered that up until about 1962, all the major indexes that they measured, and that would be divorce rates, teenage suicides, SAT scores, rates of alcoholism, et cetera, were pretty much level from year to year to year. There were a few spikes during the war years and things like that. For the most part, you could say it was flatline up until the early 60s. And then one year after that decision in Engels versus Vattel on June the 25th, 1962, all the major metrics that determine the health of a nation began to run in the wrong direction. Teen suicides increased. Out of wedlock birth rates increased. Social stability, SAT scores began to drop. And all the other metrics that they use to determine the welfare of a nation began to decrease. And for a period of time, it wasn't even a slight linear decrease. It was exponential. It just fell off the charts because of that decision of the Earl Warren Court. But let me stop for a moment and just continue through history. We'll talk about our President Eisenhower, who would have been the 34th president of the United States following Truman, the 33rd, and Roosevelt, the 32nd president. After Mr. Eisenhower, Nixon, another player in this whole thing, a very conservative Republican, lost in a very close election to John F. Kennedy. And then John F. Kennedy was assassinated, and he was replaced by, and again, I don't pull any punches. I'm a man of direct speech, a man that I believe was as wicked and evil a human being as ever walked the face of the earth. That was Lyndon Baines Johnson. A man who listened to Lady Bird. He was very matriarchal orientation, and listened to his wife and some other female counselors that he had. And he created the Great Society, and the Great Society on paper was just another version of what the 32nd President of the United States, Eleanor Roosevelt. Oops, did I say Eleanor? I guess I should have said Franklin, but the reality was Eleanor was the 32nd President of the United States. But their Great Society, their New Deal, was just as, well, it was one of those tipping points in American history when things went from being a local control over the society. Families and communities and churches were the dominant reference point for how things should be. They were the dominant welfare system in America until Eleanor Roosevelt, with all of her initiatives and Franklin's penchant for poker and bourbon, changed the rhyme and timber of our nation, began that pot of God's judgment tipping to the tipping point. But Lyndon Baines Johnson came along and was reelected in 1964 and then promptly got us deeply involved in the Gulf of Tonkin, through the Gulf of Tonkin, in Vietnam War, which I, after the fact, I'm not going to turn around and say I didn't support it. There were reasons to support it, but my reason as an Air Force pilot to support the war was a good bit different than what Johnson's reasons were. But the point is, Lyndon Johnson created the Great Society, and even though he was only elected president for another four-year term before he decided not to run in 68. Lyndon Johnson, well, let's just say he wasn't a good guy. But Lyndon Johnson was pushing for abortion his whole time, courtesy of his wife and the other female advocates in his circle of inner advisors. And so, courtesy of the Earl Warren Court, Earl Warren being the Chief Justice during the time of the Lyndon Baines Johnson administration, saw the Roe v. Wade terrible decision on January the 22nd, 1973, come to pass. Now, LBJ was only president to 68, but it was LBJ's pushing under the Great Society, continuing the initiatives of our president, Eleanor Roosevelt, in the 30s and the 40s, for abortion that finally won the day. And on January the 22nd, 1973, another day that will live in infamy, the 60 million children to date that have been slaughtered in their mother's wombs began to be slaughtered legally on that date. Now, here's the hair-raising thing that I didn't know, and I believe is a result of God's direct judgment. Roe versus Wade, the decision, a 7-2 decision by the Supreme Court, January the 22nd, 1973. While the news of the decision was being delivered, there was a bulletin. CBS, we interrupt this program to bring you a special bulletin. Lyndon Baines Johnson is dead. He died of a massive heart attack today on January the 22nd, 1973. Now, you can say what you want to say, but God acts to make points to his people. And Lyndon Baines Johnson was as much responsible, even though the decision occurred after his administration was ended, to push the decision of Roe v. Wade than any other president. And I believe God dealt with him. And we have a lot of examples in history. We're going to talk about those tomorrow in a book that we're going to review. By Michael Medved, called God's Hand on America. Well, we're going to see how God acts sometimes to straighten us out when we wander outside his critical instructions. And the right to life, a child being protected, is one of the most sacred of God's choice principles. Human life, continuing from one generation to the next, being raised by a loving father and a loving mother in stability and correction and love, is one of the essential principles of God's plan to reconcile all of creation back to himself, which we'll see fulfilled in, I believe, Revelation chapter 20, verse 10, when Satan himself is cast headlong into the lake of fire there to join the beast and the false prophet that were thrown in 1,000 years before. And all of us who will be standing there, and we will be standing there, we will be standing there if we're believers, with our brother, the Lord Jesus Christ, the judge of Satan, acting as his auxiliary judges. We will hear Satan say the last four words he will ever say: Jesus Christ is Lord, to fulfill the verses of Philippians chapter 2. And then we'll see the new heaven and the new earth come down. But the point is, God judges abortion. And God also judges another pillar of human culture when it is, judges those who bring down another pillar of human culture, which is the Christian family. The right to life, and one man and one woman joined together for a physical lifetime, reproducing spiritually and physically as often as God gives them the opportunity, in perpetuity, until that moment in Revelation 20:10 where we watch Satan get what's coming to him. When anyone interferes with that process, they die. And, of course, what I've just shared with you was the sin of the seven nations that were residing in the land of Canaan 1,400 or so years B.C., when Joshua and the children of Israel were told to go and possess the promised land. Well, that happened to be the land of Canaan, reserved for them by God. And initially, Joshua did what he was told to do. He went in and slew every man, woman, child. Didn't take any trees, didn't take any booty. He did what he was told. The evil that was in Canaan, the people who slaughtered innocent children, who burned children alive in the hands of the god Molech and Chemosh, those who had And some of it, much, well, all of it is really too unsavory to talk about on air because we don't know who's listening. But essentially, sexual perversity with a big exponential number next to it took place. And those were things that God said thou shalt not do under any circumstances. The Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, and the Perizzites. Seven of them. And they all believe that, well, let's just sacrifice children, let's have orgies, and let's do other things we can't talk about. And quite frankly, ladies and gentlemen, in principle, it's not much different than what the Democrat Party of the United States and its empowers are doing today. And God always judges those who particularly kill the innocent or try to destroy the family. Anything that interferes with the propagation of human life from one generation to the next, with that human life being raised in the fear and admonition of the Lord, and each person having the right to preach the gospel unhindered in season and out of season, regardless of the sophistry of the idea of separation of church and state. God judges those things. A number of years ago, I went on record as saying that America was under God's judgment. And I want to make this point, and I'm not going to belabor it too much, but if we don't understand, if we excuse ourselves, if I excuse myself, let's say, for my sins, which that's pretty easy for me to do, all a man's ways are right in his own eyes, aren't they? We tend to see the sins of others, but in reflecting on those four questions we talked about, I ask myself frequently, often in the wee hours of the morning, do I believe? What do I believe? What do I really believe? And as a result of what I really believe, what am I doing? And I can tell you, I've asked that and answered it many, many times. As I said in the very beginning, I have a certitude about where we are. I'm not ashamed that I'm in the significant minority, as is a good man, Dr. Gene Youngblood, in believing that the rapture of the church is at hand, that the great tribulation lies before us, that the millennial reign of Christ, well, could be as soon as just a little over 7 years from now could begin. And that event in Revelation 20:10 being another 1,007 or 8 years farther down the road. But we are, I believe, of a certitude, as does Dr. Youngblood. At the close of an age where grace dominated, where the Gentiles who dwelt in darkness saw great light. The Gentiles, according to Romans chapter 11, created, engrafted in to make the Jews jealous of what they lost before their return for their, well, their glorious sojourn through the tribulation, in which 144,000 Jewish virgin males will be the heralds of truth in a very, very dark and frightening world. But the church has to leave. It has to go away. It's going to be removed, no matter what anyone out of the Reformation has told you or anyone else in the current church of Laodicea that's all over the globe right now, preaching a gospel of convenience and self-love and anything but the truth. Jesus said, I had tribulation in this world, so will you. And the true church right now is being hammered left and right, not only by the godless, and I say that with full intent of the word, Democrats. You cannot be a Democrat and be a believer. It is not possible. The Democrats, the Marxists, the socialists, the atheists, the Wiccans, all those that are now putting truth for error and error for truth are espousing. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a president that has been given to us, I believe by God, to give us a little bit of time to do what happens in any period of God's judgment. Here's what I mean by that. We'll go back to the time of Hezekiah. Oh, I'm going to guess 1,250 years B.C., somewhere thereabouts, about the time that the Hittites, who should have been destroyed in the land of Canaan, were giving a lot of trouble to the Egyptians and were beginning to move toward the Anatolian plains from which they would become the great Ottoman Empire 2,000 years later, 800 to 1,500 to 2,000 years later, when they would become the force that kept Jews and Christians out of the Holy Land and prevented people from understanding the truth that the Jews are really God's people. The church has not replaced them. They are God's people, always have been, always will be, in spite of the rebellion and some of the evil they've been involved in. King Hezekiah was the greatest, at least according to the Bible, the greatest of the kings of Judah. He was a righteous man, and because he cried out to God at a time when God was going to judge the Jews for their wickedness, he turned the clock back and he allowed Hezekiah to live, I think it was another 16 years or so, and blessed him. But he was a good king, let's just say that. Hezekiah was a good king, yet because he was a good king, there was no guarantee that his children were going to be as good as he was, and the man that followed him was Manasseh. And according to Jeremiah chapter 15, verse 4, it was because of the sins of Manasseh, who did the opposite of what his dad had done. He did extreme evil. Judgment was decreed on the house of Judah, and it was not going to be retracted. The final decree of judgment was stated in Jeremiah 15, 4, because of Manasseh, and began to fall. But God always lets his judgment come slowly. I believe Manasseh ruled for 49 years. And then for 2 years after him, his equally wicked son Amon ruled. And then something odd happened. Another good king popped up. His name was Josiah. And Josiah led a superficial revival in the land of Judah. The people's hearts were far from what they were saying, but the king was pretty good. But judgment had been decreed. God allowed people some time to get the message. Judgment has begun. And of course, in 1 Peter, it says, let judgment begin with the house of God. And elsewhere in Scripture, if God judges his people, how will it be for those who don't belong to him? But at any rate, Josiah came along, but judgment had been decreed, and probably the second best king of Judah died in battle, and three substitution kings later, they were just vassal kings. Judah was carried off into 7 years of captivity in Babylon and began the prophetic clock ticking toward the time that we live in today. But the point is this: God decreed judgment, in my opinion, anecdotally, based, I believe, on scriptural fact and also on secular history. God began to judge America in the Clinton administration when the will of the people reflected the condition of their heart. They elected what was in the Northern Kingdom, with Ahab and Jezebel, two very wicked people. And those wicked people destroyed the intelligence network in this country. They destroyed they embedded in the Department of Justice career employees that would pervert justice in this country. The FBI began to be changed from what it was under Hoover and some of the others into an agency that was filled with, I don't have to mention any names because you saw it all in the last 4 years in spades, and we're now reaping what was sown. The American people, given the right to choose the leaders over them, chose Ahab and Manasseh, and then later on, I believe we had the equivalent of Manasseh. And Manasseh I'm sorry, I had a intervention here on my phone. Manasseh was evil, and I believe when America elected Barack Obama in 2008, that was just the last straw. The final piece of the puzzle was in place so that judgment could fall. But the point of all this, and I wandered a little bit, I apologize, judgment is decreed. There's a period of time for people to get the message and to understand, and then when it falls swiftly. So, as I said in the beginning, I don't share the view that we can be resurrected from our current tipping point, that we were tipped incrementally in the 30s under Roosevelt. We were tipped incrementally in the Eisenhower era under the Warren Court. We were certainly tipped under JFK, and particularly so tipped further under Lyndon Baines Johnson, who I believe was judged, killed by a heart attack, January the 22nd, 1973, the same day that the fruit of his labor was revealed, and that was Roe versus Wade, an affront to God. But I believe now that God's judgment is falling on this nation. We may get into that. We may look at Isaiah chapter 3 tomorrow as I also go through a book review with you that Michael Medved released earlier this year, actually at the end of last year, that deals with God's hand on America. We need to understand that people like Dr. Gene A. Youngblood are preaching truth. And when that man is out with appendicitis or he's not able to man this microphone and others, I guess, less qualified to do so, have to fill in, some bad things happen. We need Dr. Youngblood. We need the message of dispensational theology. We need to understand that we are under God's judgment. And if we're not under it, we're awful near it. And God has given us a grace period. That grace period was through our current president, Donald J. Trump. I don't lift him up as a godly man or anything else, but he was God's gift at a time when America was about to hear judgment pronounced and acted. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you join us tomorrow. I hope you pray for Dr. Youngblood, and I hope you'll forgive me for any shortcomings in my words today, and particularly having to do it over the telephone. God bless you, and join us tomorrow. Until then, so long.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study, prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in this same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.